All right. Well, today's going to be an introductory lesson to our topic, which I'll share in a moment. I want to thank Steve for tag teaming with me through this quarter. For the times I've been here and the feedback, I think he's done an excellent job and really, really good job. And he will be filling in, and we're just sharing the quarter. So he'll be teaching a few more Sundays through the rest of this quarter as well, towards the end of the month and a couple in the beginning of May, I don't remember what I told him. But anyway, he knows what the dates are. And I appreciate that very much. I want you to think about life in the Garden of Eden, not in your garden, which I'm guessing is very different than life in the Garden of Eden. So when you think about life in the Garden of Eden, back in the day, what do you think of? How was it maybe to live in the garden?
I can't really, and honestly, I don't think we can imagine what it would have been like. It was perfect. You know, sometimes we look at something and say, boy, that's perfect for it's not. That was perfect. That was the perfect life.
Okay, so what would be perfect about it?
No weeds.
No weeds.
There's no sin. There's no any corruption of any kind. It's just
living your life at ease, okay?
Flowers. Coming to North Carolina during this time kind of remind me of gardening.
Okay. So seeing God's beauty, His creation. What else?
No conflict.
No conflict. How or between who or?
Adam and Eve with God with the creatures. Okay.
So peace, harmony. What else? What do you think of the garden? If you were living in the garden, what would you expect?
Being able to walk with God, like what would you talk to him about? That's such a grand conversation.
So one of the biggest differences, right, is just our relationship with God. Because post the garden, chapter 3, how did our relationship change with God, or did it? Satan, basically tempted, and man sinned and introduced sin, and then our relationship was different with God. So walking with God, because they kind of, when you read it, they're just talking with God, and the difference a little bit today is what? They talked to God, and what happened?
He talked back,
right? Or he'd look for them and talk to them. And so God's just talking to his creation. He's talking to man, and man's talking to God. And, what else do you think of? Anything else?
I don't know who said animals, but I'd never thought about that. But I guess all of what he created was in that garden. I would just talk to Adam and Eve in the garden, but I guess all the animals.
All the animals were there because he was trying to name them before, right? And he looked at all the animals and said, I need somebody more than an animal, right? And that's when God created a woman, right, to be with him, a perfect mate, the two of them together. Okay. I mean, it's a pretty incredible time when you think about what did they lose when God said, when he was upset with them and he punished them, what did they lose? What would they have to endure going forward?
Death.
So that's the other thing, right? So no fear of death in the garden. I mean, think of that. I mean, no death, which means no what? What precedes death usually? I mean, there's no, cancer, right? Because you're not going to die of cancer. Your body's not going to deteriorate, because there's the tree of knowledge of good and evil, but is that what kept them alive forever?
No.
What kept them alive? But there was, they had the access to the tree of life, which they were banned from, right? Once they were put out of the garden, they didn't have access to the tree of good and evil, and they didn't have access to the tree of life. So think of living being just created with no concept of death. That's why when they say, you shall surely die, I mean, that was actually meant something, that you would surely die, because that was a new concept that I could die.
I was just going to say the same thing. Until after the sin, like, not even animals were dying. So, like, they really had no... I mean, that's my thought, at least, is that they really... What would be the concept of death? What would that mean?
That's
why when Cain kills Abel... It's such a tragedy, because up to that point, there is no indication other than some animals to make clothing. Death is just not something they really have experienced.
So a little bit to Gary's point, it's almost when you've only lived, right? It's like if you've only grown up on an island,
that's all you know.
Out in the middle of nowhere, it's hard to explain London, okay, or the United States. Yeah.
Everything about them and their existence was pure and innocent. I think of a very young toddler. Before you start teaching them right and wrong, you know, just past the baby age, but very young toddler, they just exist. They have no cares, no concerns. They live in the moment. They enjoy, they experience, and it's just total pure innocence.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's not where we live. Right? We're not living in the garden. We've been, don't have access to the garden. We don't have access to that kind of special circumstances. Things changed. So, is life different for us than it was for the first whatever time of Adam and Eve? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you go, and granted, we're different here, but if you go on an African safari, there's a good chance that animals are going to hunt you down and kill you. And, I mean, they were living with all these animals, too, so at some point that relationship changed, because now, even though it may not be innate evil, it's just behaviors are different, therefore leading to death.
Yeah, everything's different. This life, God told, what did he tell Adam as far as part of his punishment? How was it going
to
be different for him?
He's
going to have to work the ground, right? Stuff isn't just going to fall out of the air for you. You know, stuff's just not going to show up. Like, if it's like kids, right? I mean, what do we have to tell our kids sometime? Do you think the refrigerator just, like, populates itself? Right? Like, this stuff just doesn't, you know, there's not a grocery fairy, right, that just, like, supply. But they had a grocery fairy, okay? It was God. I mean, God took care of them. And, you know, now we have to work for that stuff. I mean, we have to, through the sweat of our brow, you know, childbirth was different. The relationship was, I mean, everything's different, okay? It's going to be different. So what is it? I want to just jot down a few things. Just what is it about this life now that's hard? So what's hard about this life now?
There's evil.
Okay, sin, evil,
pain.
Death.
Disease.
Okay.
Suffering. Have to work for your food.
Man.
We're separated. I'll just put.
God, I mean,
it's They were.
What'd you say?
Said math.
Well, you have to think. I mean, how much did they have to think? I mean, really?
It was there. They didn't know.
I mean, they just, all they had to do was enjoy God's blessings. Right? They didn't have to think about math, or there wasn't currency, or what's hard about this life?
Seems like everything that come about from after that moment is what we're saying.
What else is hard about this life?
They didn't have to worry about different people, their thoughts or opinions or anything. It's just each other.
There wasn't a difference. I mean, there wasn't any difference in them to think about.
Racism. That wasn't there before.
Uncertainty.
The struggle between man and woman. Relationship problem, I guess you would say.
I was waiting for this one. I mean, are you kidding me? Relationships? I mean, how much?
Broken families.
Yeah.
Well, that's.
This isn't really meant that you have to read them all over again. I'm not. What else is hard about this life? I mean, does anybody have any? Oh, okay. Well, work is this kind of meant you have to actually expend some energy. I mean, does anybody have any financial worries or challenges ever?
That's why you have to work.
I think it sometimes in this world it's hard to follow Christ for the simple reason people look down on you for being a Christian. And I don't care if they look down on me for it, but I mean that's the world we live in, especially now.
Persecution.
Mm. Needs, fears, desires.
They're getting bigger bored.
Division.
It's bringing children up in our world today.
It's for the children. That's what I'm caring for.
War.
Deception.
That goes under politics.
Cruelty.
Okay. We lost a lot.
That's the end. Just the start of
it. We gained a lot, too.
Hmm?
We gained a lot, too, what we don't want.
Yep.
If we stick to what we say we believe, we gained a whole lot.
I mean, you look at the things that are on there. I just jotted a few down in my notes. We covered them all, plus, plus, plus. Okay. 2.6 million Americans last year were involved in some sort of workplace violence. 27% of Americans say that stress is so high that it paralyzes them most days in some way. 66% of Americans suffer with some level of depression. Stress levels have increased so much past COVID. I have the numbers on each of these, but with race relations, so you raise that. Race relations, health issues, financial pressures, inflation, bullying in schools is up. There have been already this year more than 75 mass shootings in the United States since January 1. Right. You can go on and on and on. How do we make it in this life?
There's only one way, and that's with Christ. How can you make it without
it? Being a Christian.
Okay. Going along with that, Hebrews 11 passage that Joe hit on, we've hit here recently a couple times, is we're like those in Hebrews 11. We're looking for a better place.
Exactly.
And so I think when you see all, this world's not going to fix itself. No matter whatever program or money they throw at it, this world's broken and it's permanently broken. And so that's why we can't make this our home. We look for that better city.
Yeah, we absolutely can't make this our home, you know, because it's, well, you can, and you will be quite miserable. Because it's there's times it's miserable anyway. Christian or not a Christian. Right? Does being a Christian isolate you from troubles and pain, disappointment?
It can't take that promise away.
Evil can touch you, but it's not going to take that away.
You have to give Christ up by yourself. Nobody can take it from you.
Okay. So how do you get through this life? What are ways you get, how do you get through this life? I get Christ. Okay, not arguing with that. Get that. But what does that mean?
For me setting my mind on Jesus and things above, as Colossians the third chapter, first to the third verse said, now that you have, you know, come to know God, set your affection on things above.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've been doing for 20 years. So when this really tough situation happened, that gave me strength.
Gave
me strength. The devil come to steal, kill, and destroy. Jesus said, I come that you may have life and have it more abundantly.
That's right.
So we don't have to focus on these things. We focus on what's going to come to us. In the afterlife.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So part of it's about focus, for sure. So where we focus is how we get through. But we can't escape this life. So you're going to live in this world, and cruddy things are going to happen. Okay? Were you going to say something?
Still being in this world but not of this world, I'm able to see, you know, but I'm able to look back and look back on those things that I know it couldn't have been nobody else but him that brought me.
That's right.
So to answer that question, that hope is and if you look at like with suicide and some of those other things, you know, people got to that place of hopelessness.
That's right.
So I try to stay hopeful.
Yep.
And even in those things that don't come as I would like them, or people do things, who's to say what their actions have shielded me from?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just reading some of those things and all of that other stuff, I still try to stay hopeful and thankful, because even in those things that I don't see, I know that he's shielding us from something.
That's right. Yeah, so staying hopeful, thankful, having gratitude, your focus on the right things. What else is even God put in place to help you out here?
Our church family. I don't know how we get through stuff, and I know there's stuff I would have never got through without the church family. You got two choices in this world. You pick your family. You can pick your church family, or you can pick the world. That's your two choices. In my opinion, that's only two choices you have.
So your church family. So there's things that we do internally, just, you know, us, how we focus, what we think about. But even still, we don't always do it great.
Oh, no.
Right? And so how does a church family help?
With me, it's what do they his word, the Bible. Because a lot of times things will be bothering me, and I can just sit down and read it in it. Like it lifts away.
Okay, yeah. So it's focusing again on the Word, on Christ. But how does the family help? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, when you know each other, you see when somebody is struggling, when they're weak, maybe they are losing hope, maybe they are losing their focus, and you step in and you help refocus them. You give them hope again. You make up the shortcomings where they're falling short.
Okay. What's a word sometimes we might use for what we do to each other? Encourage. Right? We encourage one another. What does that mean? What does it mean to encourage?
Motivate.
Okay, to motivate. What's part of the base? What's the base word part of it? Courage. So when you think of courage, what do you think of when someone has courage?
Strength.
Strong. Brave. Okay. So, go ahead.
I was just thinking about what James said about Job, right? He said, consider the long suffering or the patience, probably more like the word there's endurance of Job. Who, in Job's situation, I mean, I can't think of a more tragic. It's been a few weeks, and God didn't take any of it away. He still suffered, he still cried, he still dealt with the physical pain, the emotional. But God notes him as noble because of how he endured it, how he was able to overcome. And one thing we have, that, at least in the book of Job, that he didn't really have was the support system. But I think about even more than encouragement is support, right? Because sometimes life happens, and we can encourage, but when somebody's in the middle of it, it's hard. But like you're saying, just helping each other have the courage, the ability to get through.
Pick them up when they fall.
Because sometimes it's like crawling through mud. You got to get to the other side.
That's right. So, go ahead, Si.
Courage is, it's not necessarily what you're willing to do. It's what you're willing to do when you're scared to death. Or what you're willing to do when you don't know what the outcome might be.
But you're willing to try.
Okay. So, facing these things, even as Christians, can we be scared to death?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this is a heavy list. Okay. And so when you think about having courage, when you think about encouraging someone, you are encouraging, you are giving them courage, you are bolstering their courage to face life, is we have to face it. And that's what I want to talk about in our class for the lessons that I have, is I want to talk about encouragement. I want to talk about us as encouragers. Okay? Because life is difficult. And it's going to be difficult. Under the best of circumstances, you're going to be disappointed. People are going to disappoint you. Children are going to disappoint you. Spouses are going to disappoint you. Your boss, you're going to have health issues. Death is certain. Sickness is certain. I mean, this just, it's not for the faint of heart, right? People will say, you need courage. And that doesn't just come when you really figure it out, is it doesn't come because of my own power.
No, absolutely
not. I don't have courage because of my own power. I have courage because of my focus on God, the Word, the whatever we write, that we know we walk. We, even though we don't walk with God as Adam and Eve walked with God, but we walk with God, and Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, right? I shall not want. That He will guide me. He will lead me through pastures, right? He'll make me to lie down in green pastures. He'll prepare a table, what, in the presence of who? My enemies, where I'm scared to death. He will sit me down right there in front of my enemies, and He will take care of me and feed me. But who are we? We are whose children?
God's.
And we are to help each other, right? We are to encourage one another. We can't get so, well, we'll talk about this in a minute. I don't want to go too far. Look at Proverbs 12:25. What does that say? Someone read that, Proverbs 12:25.
Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad.
Yeah. So anxiety is, you know, is one of the things. You know, depression. 2/3 of Americans have some level of depression. Okay. A good word makes it glad. Have you ever been in a bad spot and someone just happens to say the right thing to you and it just flipped it for you? Maybe not 100%, but 80%.
It gives you a new train of thought.
Gives you a whole different focus, as Sandy said. It knocked you back on track. Right? Just a word, a phrase, a call, something someone said. Do you have those things in your mind that someone has said to you maybe 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago that changed basically your life path?
Yes, completely.
Right. There is power in encouragement. There is power in the things that we say to one another at the right times. Look at, while you're in Proverbs, flip over to 25:11. This is one that's pretty well known. They've marketed this all over commercially, so capitalism at work. Proverbs 25:11 says what?
A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver.
Yeah. You can read through Proverbs and everywhere, and you know, we'll probably, I don't know if we'll look at James or not, depending if we have time, but a word fitly spoken, right, at the right time, the right thing, it's like apples of gold. I mean, the value, the nourishment, right, is is really high. Is encouragement the same thing as hope?
It can be. It gives you hope. Encouragement gives you hope.
Is it the same thing as hope?
Probably not the same, but it gives you.
Okay. Well, so what's the... How do they work together, or what's the difference?
Hope's kind of the fuel of our encouragement. That's what...
Aren't they kind of mutually, helping mutually strengthen each other?
Yeah.
If I have hope, it can be encouraging. If I'm encouraged, I can have hope. It
gives you...
What about joy? Is encouragement the same thing as joy? Okay.
I've heard a Bible definition of hope as confident expectation.
Okay.
I think hope scripturally is based on something we know is going to happen. We grasp it because it's based on a certain fact that God says, and I can trust God, so I know that that's not going to move. And that eternal salvation, the fact that there's a home in heaven, salvation of Jesus is sufficient. That's a hope I have. That's God's word. That's sound. That's not going to move. And that's what I grab a hold of to keep me going through the Christian life. Because I've got hope that is founded by God. It's not going anywhere. I can grasp that, stay on that, and all the things that are coming on me, man, that's the fears of life as it is. That hope's not changing.
Okay.
And that's where I found it, and all the other things that come about it. And we can help each other out as we go about life trying to make it. And that's, I think, a support, I guess, I like it. Coming alongside, why did God send His Holy Spirit? Those apostles and people coming up in the first place, need somebody to help you. They need somebody to remind you. They need somebody that needs, so it comes alongside. And that's sort of the way I see us. We come alongside each other. You don't have to walk this race alone. You know, you're in this together. And that's I like some of those pictures of races and stuff you see, and somebody's really dragging her. That's probably one of the biggest ones is the Olympics several years ago, when the guy's running his heart out, and he trips and falls and hard, and dad jumps up out of the stands and down there to help him. We're going to finish this thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
and going. But that's, I guess I see us as it is and going. There's several related facts going. But we know we got a hard road ahead, but together we can make it.
Okay.
We just got to keep reminding each other of that. If we're not in this alone together, we're going to make it.
Okay.
We're going to be the kind of people we ought to be.
Sandy, did you want to say something?
Just taking a kind of an everyday worldly example, you walk by a body of water and you see a young child and they're struggling and drowning. No. Hope is what gives you the hunger and the desire that you can save them, that they can be saved. And courage is what allows you to jump in that water and save them. So hope is like the belief, and courage is what helps you to put it all together and execute it.
Okay.
I mean, if you don't have the hope, there's the courage isn't, you know, if it's a hopeless situation,
okay.
Courage isn't needed.
So how is hope or joy, how does that or does it enable encouragement? So can you think of yourself, if you're an encourager, do you having hope or you having joy in your life, does that important for you to be an encourager? Or is it not that big of a role to you being an encourager?
You have to be.
You have to have a bank to draw from. Like if you're empty, what parents, grandparents experience this, like when you are empty, it's so hard to communicate your kids because you just feel drained, right? And so you've got to work at making sure you're taking care of yourself, and then you're refilling your your supply, so then you can give to others.
Yeah, it's hard to give something to somebody else that you don't have.
That's right.
I mean, are Christians to be encouragers?
Sure, yes. Absolutely.
And I think even if you see an unsaved person, you hope they will give their life to Christ, and then when they do, you have the joy. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
It kind of goes hand in hand in that aspect.
Why should Christians be a people that encourage? Why? And
we have, and it's not a secret, we have the hope of eternal life. Why not encourage that to be carried on and on and on? Because if we don't encourage, it's not getting encouraged in the world in any way whatsoever.
Who should be swimming these waters the best?
We should. Christians should.
Is it because we're such amazing people?
Nope. No. We've got God. Because our God's swimming alongside us.
Because our God's amazing.
That's right.
Right? Because He's swimming with us.
Yep.
Right? He's jumped out of the stands. He's whatever it is, that old Footprints poem that was popular when I was 10 years old,
yeah.
Right? That, you know, go look it up if you don't know what I'm talking about, right? But the point is God is with us. Of all people, we should be in a position to encourage. We should have a reason to have hope. We should be full of joy. Right? I was up at 7 o'clock this morning, washing my truck, was listening to the songs. Song came up, I've got the joy, 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 you know, that whole song.
Yeah.
Right? Remember singing that as a kid or whatever?
Yes.
Do we? Do we have joy in our heart? Do we have hope in our heart? Or are we miserable? Right? Are we complaining about the manna? Okay. Are we grumbling all the time? I mean, we walk with God, right? We've been redeemed. We still have struggles. But we have hope. We know a better way. We know a better path. A better way to maneuver through all this mud. Right? You going to say something? Well, just should we be encouragers, and why would we, of all people, why would we be encouragers?
Well, two things, obedience and love.
Obedience and love.
Because God loves us, and if we want to emulate that love, we have to show it to others. And two is just sheer obedience, doing to others as you would want done unto you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's good. We need God. Got to have God. Part of God's plan, though, is the church. I mean, that's part of His plan. So His plan is that you have people on the ground with you. That's why we're supposed to meet on a regular basis. That's why we're supposed to fellowship. That's why we're supposed to build relationships. I don't really believe that God designed Christianity for you and God to be out on an island somewhere. That's not how He's set it up for this life. As He has created, He's created His desire for elders and deacons. Right? And the church. That's part of His design. So God does His part, but we are to do our part with each other. What keeps us from being ready to encourage others?
Satan. Getting weak.
see up there, and I think it's a big one, which is shame. We talk about our broken world, I think shame and guilt are two really important words. You know, in Christ, he washes away our shame, our guilt. And that allows us to have hope. I think with shame and guilt in our lives, it's very hard to have hope. And that should motivate us to share that with others. Because there's a world right now, and you can see it every day in the headlines, and all the articles you read on the news, and other places, the podcasts that we have, is around this idea of we live in a world that's broken and feels guilty about it. And people will do desperate, wicked things to cover their shame. And we have knowledge of the cure for that. And the world needs to hear it. Now, most probably won't respond, but we continue to be the beacons of that lie.
Okay. So I want you to think about, we're going to have examples and lessons as we go through on encouragement in different ways at different times to encourage. But I want you to think about, are you prepared to encourage? Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a quote from one. I think it was Tom Landry, a football coach, who said, a good coach or leader gets you to get people to do things they don't want to do to achieve the goal they want to achieve. If you see something in someone, you can get them out of the box a little bit. But, and then back to all these things, I mean, how can you walk around sad and lonely looking and depressed? And how can you encourage anyone to Christianity with all that?
That's right. So we need to think about where.
Brother, may I please add something?
Go ahead.
I can remember when I was younger and I grew up in the Methodist church, real quick. The people were so sad. And I said to myself, I'll wait until I get old and become a Christian. Because I don't want to be a sad Christian.
All right. So think about that. Are you a sad Christian? And if so, why? Okay? We need to be prepared to be encouragers. Thank you.